When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
New proposals from the SEC could fundamentally change market dynamics. What impact would they have on everyday investors? Plus, how much of a wedge issue will abortion rights be heading into the midterm elections? We'll hear from voters and candidates in New Hampshire.
There were independent voters who were really torn on this issue, but of course, there are voters on both sides of the aisle who feel very strongly.
Plus, our love-hate relationship with Google Docs. It's Wednesday, June 8th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. We report exclusively that baby formula maker Abbott Labs was alerted to allegations about problems with its Sturgis plant months earlier than previously known. According to a person familiar with the matter, an Abbott employee filed a complaint in February of 2021, alleging a host of issues, including failing equipment and formula released without adequate evidence that it was safe for consumption. A government official says the Labor Department provided the complaint to Abbott and the FDA in the same month. Details of the complaint offer a fuller picture of the timeline leading up to the shutdown of the plant in February of this year, which has contributed to a severe shortage of baby formula in the U.S. A spokesman for Abbott said it investigated the federal OSHA complaint and has not been able to confirm the allegations. Abbott restarted production at Sturgis on Saturday. The Securities and Exchange Commission is considering a revamp of stock market rules that would require brokerages to route investors' orders into auctions. That could have a major impact on retail trading. In a speech today, SEC Chair Gary Gensler laid out the details, saying the change would increase competition in the market to provide the best prices for retail investors. Our financial regulation reporter Paul Kiernan says it would mean a major shakeup.
Over the years, companies have developed lucrative business models around the execution of investors' stock orders. So when you place an order to buy or sell a stock, your broker routes that order to a market maker. If you're an individual investor, it's probably one of a handful of firms called wholesalers. They're big electronic trading firms, and they make a profit based on the spread between the buy and the sell price. But the SEC thinks that it can become more efficient and that it can narrow the spread that these wholesalers collect by introducing more competition. And so one of the ideas that Chair Gensler put forth today is to create auctions whereby different market makers compete to execute investors' orders.
A top executive at online brokerage Robinhood blasted the proposal, saying that individual investors enjoy benefits from the current structure, like not having to pay for trades and fast execution of their orders. Paul says retail brokerages like Robinhood are also benefiting.
A lot of the changes that they are proposing might make it harder for brokerages like Robinhood to simply route customers' orders to a big wholesaler like Citadel Securities or Virtue Financial in exchange for what is known as payment for order flow. Payment for order flow is a significant source of revenue for a lot of retail brokerages that do it. Not all of them do, but the ones that depend on it would like to keep that revenue stream alive.
For years, big tech stocks have driven the major indexes higher. But now, investors are turning away from risky bets. The S&P 500's information technology sector has dropped nearly 20% this year, and the broader index is down 13%. It's the sector's worst start to the year since 2002. Our markets reporter, Caitlin McCabe, says some investors believe the era of tech's market dominance could be coming to an end.
To many investors, the bets against tech and the months-long turmoil in the market echo the dot-com bubble of 2000. But while tech stock valuations soared in recent years, they still haven't approached the level seen in March 2000. Still, some investors say they are bracing for losses ahead.
Caitlin says the Federal Reserve's plan to continue raising interest rates this year could also put more pressure on tech and other growth stocks. Spirit Airlines has delayed a stockholder meeting set for this week to allow the company time to assess a takeover offer from JetBlue. The discount carrier says it still recommends shareholders adopt a merger with Frontier, but says it's postponing the meeting until the end of the month to continue discussions with both bidders. Vaccine maker Moderna says its modified COVID-19 booster shot provided a stronger immune response against the Omicron variant compared to the original vaccine. The company says it will submit preliminary data from its new study to U.S. health regulators and is hopeful it can make the modified booster available in late summer. The study did not measure whether the modified booster actually reduces the risk of the virus caused by Omicron. And dozens of women and girls, including Olympic gymnast Simone Biles and Ali Reisman, are seeking $1 billion in damages from the FBI for ignoring their concerns about then-USA Gymnastics doctor Larry Nassar. They drew on a report by the Justice Department's Inspector General, which found FBI agents disregarded gymnast allegations of sexual assault and later made false statements to cover up their mistakes. Nassar is serving an effective life sentence in prison on sexual abuse and child pornography charges. Coming up, both Democrats and Republicans are eyeing New Hampshire this election season as a potential battleground. What are the candidates focusing on? And what do voters say are the major issues driving their ballots? That's after the break.
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of the Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
New Hampshire is shaping up to become a battleground state in the midterm elections. Republicans think there's a key Senate seat they can flip, which could give them control over the chamber in Washington. Democrats hope the threat of the Supreme Court overturning abortion rights could push votes their way. Meanwhile, independent voters make up the largest share of the electorate. Wall Street Journal politics reporter Eliza Collins went to New Hampshire to talk to candidates and voters to see how abortion is coloring their opinions. And she joins me now. Hi, Eliza. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Eliza, a recent Wall Street Journal poll found more than two-thirds of Americans do not want Roe v. Wade to be overturned. How does that compare to what you heard on the ground in New Hampshire?
I was hearing very similar sentiment from voters in New Hampshire. I talked to voters across the state and found pretty broad support for at least some access to abortion. A University of New Hampshire poll recently came out that said 61% of voters in the state oppose overturning Roe v. Wade. So that's close to what we're seeing nationally. But I also found that for these voters, abortion was not the only issue they were voting on. So I met some people who do feel like it's important to support someone who wants access to abortion, but they also felt conflicted because they are unhappy with how the economy is going right now, the rising gas prices and food costs people were citing to me. So I picked New Hampshire because it is a state with competitive races up and down. It's a true battleground state. And Senator Maggie Hassan is one of Republicans' top targets. If her seat flips, the U.S. Senate could flip to Republican control. And Hassan is talking about abortion. So I wanted to see how this was playing out with voters.
And Democratic Senator Hassan won her last election by just over 1,000 votes. So how is she making her pitch to voters?
So Senator Hassan is talking about abortion, access to abortion, the potential of Roe v. Wade being repealed. This was something that she ran on in 2016, or support of Planned Parenthood and access to abortion. But when I was talking to her, she also was very careful to talk about other things that were important to voters, including the economy.
Ultimately, we need to help people lower costs. We need to help people move forward with their lives, get to the other side of the pandemic, and rebuild our economy and make sure that people have a chance to thrive.
Senator Hassan's first ad of the year is about her efforts to repeal the federal gas tax and lower gas prices. Now, that idea has not gone anywhere in the Senate. She's running into resistance from Republicans and some Democrats, but she says that's a way forward. And I think that really shows that abortion is not the only issue that she's talking about, even if she hopes that that mobilizes voters. She's having to talk about other issues related to the economy.
Tell us some more about her opponents and their campaign promises.
So she has several opponents that are competing against each other ahead of the September primary. They have a very late primary. But one of her top opponents is Chuck Morse. He's the president of the state Senate right now. And he helped shepherd in a 24-week abortion ban that was passed in the state budget last summer. I went to an event where Senator Morse was speaking, and he touted that abortion ban as something that he was very proud of. But he also emphasized fiscal responsibility and the economy.
Let me tell you what we've accomplished as Republicans in this state. We built a budget that took down the business taxes in New Hampshire.
Both he and Kevin Smith, who is another top opponent, he's the former town manager of Londonderry, said that voters were most focused on the economy. And when I talked to Kevin Smith, he mentioned that abortion wasn't coming up when he was talking to voters. Now, both of them say that they do oppose abortion, but they tried to steer clear of that topic. And when I was with Kevin Smith, he was actually having a roundtable with small business owners where they focused on the issues they were having with the supply chain and inflation. And that's what Smith says, that conversation is what can win for Republicans in November.
So we heard how the candidates are making their pitches. What are voters telling you, Eliza?
There were independent voters who were really torn on this issue. But of course, there are voters on both sides of the aisle who feel very strongly. They just tended to be people who were going to vote for Democrats or Republicans regardless. But I met one woman, Laura Weissick, who was a legal assistant and university student. And talking about the potential of Roe v. Wade to be overturned was very emotional for her.
You know, rights are being taken away. I don't know what other countries, is this supposed to be a democracy? I don't know what other countries, you know, comparable that are developed to the U.S. are doing something like this.
And then she said something else. She said that she feels tired of voting in general. She's feeling really let down. She says Democrats are in the White House, there are majorities in Congress, and yet she feels like Republicans are still calling the shots. And so she said she plans to vote, but she's really not feeling very optimistic about what her vote will do.
So how about Republican voters?
So I spoke to another woman named Marie Drury, who said she was going to vote for Republicans regardless because of a host of issues.
Definitely inflation, the economy, the border. I mean, just about everything.
So she's a Republican regardless of the issue, but she is someone who opposes abortion rights and said it was a bonus to have the potential for the Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade and support candidates who also wanted to limit access to abortion.
Eliza, how important is New Hampshire for the final makeup of Congress? And what do you think their voting picture says about the country?
So New Hampshire is one of several states that we are watching very closely. And in any one of these states, especially in the U.S. Senate, if they flip, it could determine which party controls the Senate. The Senate currently is split 50-50, but Democrats have the majority because Vice President Kamala Harris can be the deciding vote of 51. So Democrats are trying to defend New Hampshire, Nevada, Arizona, and Georgia. Those are the top targets for Republicans. Meanwhile, Republicans are trying to hold on in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. So it's a competitive map. In the House, it's also very narrow. Democrats do have a majority there, but just a handful of seats need to flip, and then they would lose that. And New Hampshire has two seats. But under the current map, both seats are competitive. Republicans are playing in both seats. So we'll be watching New Hampshire closely to see, you know, if that's a sign of things to come. Republicans feel like it's a state they can really make some gains. At the federal level, Democrats control all four seats, but Republicans have the governor's mansion and the whole state legislature. So it's a real battleground state.
That's Wall Street Journal politics reporter Eliza Collins. Eliza, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, if you work in an office, "let's start a doc" is a phrase you might hear a lot. It means someone's creating a shared document, often using Google's Docs or Sheets so that multiple people can collaborate from anywhere. But our Life and Work reporter, Katie Binley, says many workers have begun to dread them.
People just feel like, oh my gosh, there's someone reading over my shoulder while I'm trying to type, and they get a bit of performance anxiety or just feel, you know, self-conscious about someone watching them type, you know, the idea that someone might be watching you while you're trying to work.
Katie says some people are finding workarounds.
One guy I chatted with, you know, he's supposed to be working in this shared doc that I think about a dozen people tend to be able to view, and they do brainstorming in there. But then when it's time for him to actually write copy for a campaign or a project, he will copy everything from the original file, make a shadow copy that's private to only him. He'll do all his work in there, all the writing, and then he pastes the finished product back into the shared doc. And that way no one can kind of spy on him during his process.
And that's what's news for this Wednesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.